Morning, everybody. It is April. No, April. It is June.
We'll go with April.
29th.
We have more time. More time in paradise. Oh, my gosh.
Think how many bills we can get out of ways and means.
This is the Education Subcommittee of Ways and Means. And we are still here, and we are still working, and we will be here tomorrow, too.
Yes, there'll be a meeting tomorrow, which is Friday, sometime after full. We should be doing the ODE budget and Senate Bill 182 as of right now.
Do we get to come back on Saturday?
You will likely have full on Saturday.
Yeah, I know.
And floor, I guess.
Yep.
Okay, with that, I will open a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2246. Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Chair, there are a couple people signed up for this bill for the public hearing portion. Keep in mind this should be about the fiscal side of the bill more than the content, but to keep in mind this bill passed out of the House Education Committee and included work by a work group that I know Representative Smith Warner was part of. I think she was the only one from this subcommittee. Generally, the current language of the bill, and mainly through the amendment in that was adopted by the House Ed Committee, it allows a little more flexibility for smaller and medium-sized districts. The measure said there are three areas, or what I call buckets, in ballot measure 98, if bucket, I don't mean a derogatory term, buckets, but there are three parts: career and technical education, college level educational opportunities in high school, sort of an accelerated learning item, and dropout prevention. The ballot measure says that districts must spend in all three of those areas. One of the amendments in 2246A was that for districts that would receive annually between 100,000 or less than 100,000 could spend it in one of those areas. For districts between $100,000 and $350,000 of distribution annually, they could spend it in two areas as long as one of those areas was CTE, and those districts that receive more than $350,000 were required to spend it in all three areas. One of the other changes was that school districts may use 15% of the funding for programs and strategies for eighth graders. The ballot measure originally said just high school. There were some changes in the planning plans and assessment plans. The districts are to submit three-year plans for the first biennium and four-year plans thereafter. The longer term was thought to say you need, if you just don't want to spend for 2 years, you got to look further down the road and develop your programs. It changes the definition of chronically absenteeism to students who miss 10% or more school days within a school year. And it also allows the Department of Education inside this fund that's created by 224 or by the ballot measure, to collect gifts, donations, and grants for the overall ballot measure 98 programs. And those are basically the changes that were in from the original ballot measure language that are included in 2246A.
Questions for Mr. Wilson. Senator Roblin.
So do we know how much money has been allocated to this? Because it's not in this bill.
It is not in this. It is, Mr. Chair, or Senator Roblin, it is not in this bill, but it will be in the ODE budget at about 60% of the required that's set in the ballot measure, or at $170 million.
$170. Yeah. We had asked for $175, but I understand in a little meeting that happened late at night, the speaker talked them down to $170. So that's where we're at. Okay. Madam Co-Chair, you want to add anything before I call the witnesses?
If the speaker asks for the money, not to be as much information.
Perosa Chenery, Stanford Children, and is Lori Wimmer here with OEA? Come on up, both of you. Don't hit each other or anything. Okay, go ahead.
Hi, good morning, co-chairs Monroe and Smith-Warner and members of the Subcommittee on Education for Ways and Means. For the record, my name is Parisa Chanrami. I'm the Policy and Advocacy Manager for Stanford Children. I'm here to speak in favor of House Bill 2246A, as well as funding Measure 98 at the level that was recommended in the co-chair's budget from April. To us, House Bill 2246A embodies the Measure 98 workgroup's final proposal, and we believe that it strikes a very important balance between providing districts with enough flexibility while also preserving the intent of the law. We want to thank Speaker Kotek as well as Representative Doherty for convening the Measure 98 workgroup this session. We also want to thank Representative Smith-Warner, Representatives Wilson, McLean, and Johnson for their time and dedication to this work group. We really appreciate the opportunity to engage in this process with representatives from the Oregon Department of Ed, Chief Education Office, COSA, OSBA, OEA, as well as the CTE STEM Employers Coalition and education leaders from Northwest Regional ESD, as well as the Reynolds School District. We know that Measure 98 passed by a 2-to-1 margin in November, and it also passed in every single legislative district. What I provided as part of my submitted testimony is a breakdown of what the vote results look like for every single legislative district split by House and Senate, so you have that to review. So, as of this morning, we received some numbers from the Oregon Department of Ed about how many school districts have submitted their request for funds. So right now, we know that 170 school districts have submitted requests for funds in order to submit their Measure 98 plans and start their work. That's about 86%. And we've been told that some other districts have also requested that the Department of Ed help submit their form on their behalf. So that's 170 districts and counting that have sent a signal that they are interested and committed to this work and wanting to make strong strategic investments in career technical education, dropout prevention, as well as advanced coursework at the high school level. So clearly support for Measure 98 is very high, and we know the momentum is gaining. We understand and appreciate the challenges that this committee, as well as your colleagues, face this session. And like many of you, we're disappointed that we weren't able to come to a new revenue and cost containment deal and had to pass a status quo budget for the state schools fund. Despite all of these different challenges, we remain dedicated in our position that Measure 98 would complement and build on the great work that districts are already doing. And that's why we urge you to make an investment in Measure 98 that's aligned with what the co-chairs had released in April. To us, it's an important investment, and it would go towards increasing our high school graduation rates. It's an investment in systems and strategies that have shown to produce incredible results for our kids. We recently traveled to Chicago. I actually just a couple hours ago got off the plane from Chicago with seven Oregon school districts and the Oregon Department of Ed. It was a three-day training at the University of Chicago. This was the first part of a three-part series, and it was focused on freshmen on track. These districts and many more are eager to put what they learned into practice, and a strong investment in Measure 98 will allow them to do so. It's difficult to express to you the level of enthusiasm we witnessed during the training. One of the school leaders came up to us and said that she was on fire about this and that this is what we really needed to be doing. And that spirit permeated throughout the entire group. Our team left feeling very confident that the seven districts, along with the 170 districts that have applied for funds, are going to continue to move forward with enthusiasm, implementing strategies that are backed by solid research and receiving ongoing support from us, from the University of Chicago, as well as the Oregon Department of Ed. So right now, what became excitingly clear is we have this research-based know-how on what we need to do, and Measure 98 provides the much-needed focus and resources that districts will need to improve high school graduation rates. Remember, 170 districts and counting have already opted in, and we urge you to pass House Bill 2246A and make a really incredibly strong investment in Measure 98. Thank you for your time.
Well, first of all, welcome back to God's country. I'm glad you survived Chicago. Secondly, of the approximately 25 districts that haven't got their plans in yet, are those mostly the very small districts? Do you know?
I'd have to double check that with the department. I haven't seen the full list of districts yet, but I can follow up and get back to you.
Thank you very much. Other questions of this witness? Senator Roblin.
So I have a few concerns, as you've known. We've talked about a lot of them. And one of them is that, do you know how many CTE teachers there are out there available for districts to hire? Have we done any research on whether there are certified people in the state that actually can develop those courses and make it happen?
Co-chairs Monroe, Smith Warner, and Senator Roblin, I'd have to do some more research on that. I'd like to double check with TSPC and the Department of Ed, and I can get back to you on that.
Okay, because one of the concerns I have is, having been a principal, we could hardly ever find them, and we developed them ourselves. And a concern that I have is that many of the CTE programs, which are different than STEM and all those other kinds of stuff, are in rural and small districts. They've kept their programs, and so I see this as a big funding area for large school districts to hire away those teachers, and all of a sudden leave rural areas without teachers to teach the classes they've had for a long time, and then going out and trying to figure out how do we remake a whole new population of teachers, because those big districts can get a lot more money, so the opportunity to hire those teachers away makes me very concerned as a person in a rural area. Any thoughts or concerns about that with respect to the issue?
Senator Monroe, Representative Smith Warner, and Senator Roblin, I really appreciate hearing that. And one of the things that we've heard from the seven districts that we spent the last 3 days with at the conference was being able to invest more time in recruitment and being able to invest more time in the preparation of CTE teachers. So that's something we definitely have on the forefront of our minds when implementing Measure 98. I think it'll be really important that we continue to collaborate with districts where that may be a growing pain in this implementation process and ensure that there's a strong feedback loop between those districts, Department of Ed, TSPC, and that we're all collaborating with the Ed associations as well.
Go ahead.
Do we know if there are any universities' education programs that prepare teachers to be CTE teachers in this state?
Senator Monroe, Representative Smith Warner, Senator Roblin, I'd have to do some more research on that. I'd like to follow up with TSPC about the specific programming, and I can get back to you on that as well.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Another statement that has had me concerned from time to time, we had a couple other bills that came through education that had to do with spending money, and we understand that spending this money is designed by the districts to do that. But I would just like to get on the record that things like FFA, things like sociologists, school people would meet the requirements of those district plans if they wanted to use them in things like CTE or dropout prevention or whatever, that sometimes those specialists would be really helpful. And I just want to make sure on the record that from the people who actually put this proposal together, those would meet those parts of those requirements with regard to as they applied for their grants.
Senator Monroe, Representative Smith Warner, and Senator Roblin, yes, thank you for that. And I've spoken with many of the advocacy groups that are working on those bills as well. What we've recommended, because we want to maintain a certain level of autonomy and flexibility for districts, we recommended that those advocates work with the Department of Ed in their guidance tool that will list all of the potential examples where districts could use their Measure 98 dollars. And I think that'll be a very important document in shaping the plans as well.
And this will be my last one. I had more, but this will be the last one. So we passed out a budget which I felt pretty comfortable with. My districts were not planning on getting more than $8.2 billion. There are a lot of school districts in the state that 8.2 is not enough, and so they're looking at 8.4 or more. This amount of money would have made it possible that all of them would have been whole, but They're going to have to now go out and get a grant and try to figure out how to make it work with their individual school districts. It's a concern I've had a long time with respect to there was no funding attached to this particular proposal. So that funding, and I hope every school district applies for it, because the only way for them to get semi-whole, even though they can't supplant, they've got to add to it, if I understand it correctly. So if I have a CTE program that's really working, and I'm in one of those school districts that may have to cut, I may have to cut my CT program and then put in something new to use this money. And I just want to make sure that that's kind of how you see it as well.
Just to clarify, Senator Monroe, Representative Smith-Warner, Senator Roblin, what Measure 98 allows is if you have a grant program that expires or is lost, for example, you could use Measure 98 dollars to supplant and backfill. And otherwise, it's always used to supplement. So you can use those dollars to supplement, build on your existing programs, and also build new programs. You can do either or both as well.
Clarification on that one.
Second last time.
Well, the answer to the question, I do understand that if I had a grant that did it, but there's a whole lot of, again, I'm going to go to rural because that's where I come from, a whole lot of rural school districts that are right on the edge, and they have developed their programs because they use their own money. Their school district has decided CTE is really important for us. For them, if they have to cut and it ends up being, they can't add to a program that they're cutting. So they could not supplant in that case if they didn't have grant and funding money otherwise. They would have to change to a different program or do something else, which may be moot anyway because their teacher might already be going to a different school. So we'll have to wait and figure out how that happens. Just a comment, I guess, actually. Thank you. That's all I have.
Okay. Representative Parrish.
Thank you. Good morning. So I'm reading through this, and I want to be clear that I'm understanding some of the new language, and I'm going to just put it in the context of a couple of things that people in my districts want to do. So there's currently a program that is not technically run by any school district. It's an exterior program run through a nonprofit where kids are getting high school and college credit through Clackamas Community College. So the first question is, does this bill still allow for that to be considered programming or new programming for the purpose of using Measure 98 dollars to pay for it? So that's, I'm not seeing where maybe this would let us do that, and I want to be clear that this either does or doesn't, because I think if it doesn't, that's a problem. And then the second piece that I'm interested in, and I want to be clear, is the section around, dual credit community colleges. If you've got a small school and you have X amount of dollars per, child, if you're out in a, more rural community, you're probably not going to stand up a whole automotive program for, 50 high school kids in a small school with $800 per kid. That's just not going to get you where you need to be. So does this, as it's now written, allow you to take that money and apply it to a community college where there's STEM happening? And I just want to be sure that anything we pass does those two things.
Right. Could I interject here?
Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I think that those are more appropriate questions for someone from ODE, with all due respect. If those are specific, fairly technical questions, I would request that we would bring somebody from ODE up to answer that.
I'm happy to have whoever answer them,
okay.
As long as we get that on the record and
okay.
Address them.
So
we'll
I don't
get
want
to
interrupt
before
where
we
I was going to say, do you have other questions for the, just because I was going to say, because other people might have questions
just,
for ODE as well.
As a petitioner, I want to make sure that we're clear that that's something that can happen.
Yep.
We need to understand that Measure 98 is designed to attack what is perceived as one of our greatest problems in this state, and that is our low graduation levels at about 75%. And it's designed to do that in three ways. One is CTE, career technical education programs, which we've been talking about, but also to deal with chronic absenteeism, another way to deal with the graduation requirement. And the third is more dual credit classes, such as I made a career out of when I was a young high school teacher before I became an old state senator. Okay.
That's right. There you go.
So that's where we're at.
Yep.
So why don't we hear from OEA? Lori, why don't you go ahead?
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, for your record, Lori Wimmer representing 44,000 members of the Oregon Education Association. And we're here today with a little bit of ambivalence about House Bill 2246A before you today. We proposed a bill on the Senate side, Senate Bill 353, which we believe fixed a lot of the mechanical flaws with Measure 98 as written, some of them addressed this morning, as a matter of fact, problems that we saw. And before I say anything more about that, I do want to say first our thanks go to Senator Lou Frederick, who was the sponsor of that bill, Senator Roblin, whose committee heard that bill and kept it alive on the Senate side, Representative Greg Smith, who converted that bill into the A3 amendments, which I'm hopeful are in your OLIS system now, and most of all to the co-chair, Representative Smith Warner, who very ably managed a difficult work group process that unfortunately resulted in no agreement. We did not reach consensus, and so she and a couple of her colleagues took their own stab at it, and that's the bill before you today. We recognize that the failure to reach consensus had nothing to do with her skill level, which was really pretty awe-inspiring. So with all of that said, we do believe strongly that there are mechanical flaws with Measure 98 as written that were not fixed by this modest attempt at a compromise. Chiefly among them, 91% of the students in the state of Oregon will be in school districts that receive no flexibility fix under this bill. No flexibility fix. That's 91% of the students who are in the top 36% of the school districts who receive the most money. This is all based on runs that we got from the Department of Education and their numbers about the student census. So if 91% of the students receive no remedy for the flexibility issues that everyone acknowledged, we feel that that means that we still have work to do to make this act do what it's intended to do. And I want to make sure that it's clear on the record that we support the what. Everyone supports the what of Measure 98. Our concerns are the mechanics, the how. And you talk about the districts that haven't applied. I'm not sure everyone realizes 11 school districts, and I can read them for you if you're interested, are not eligible at all to receive a dime. They're just not grant eligible. So of those 25 remaining, I'm sure 11 of them are Harney County, Pine Creek, Diamond, Suntec, Struzzi, Double O, South Harney, Gentura, Malheur County, Arock, and Troy, the districts that cannot apply. When it comes to the supplant versus supplement issue, we believe that that also was not that adequately remedied. I'll give you an example of why we're so concerned about the flexibility piece. Let's take the very well-renowned school district, North Clackamas, whose superintendent was named National Superintendent of the Year. Their programs are really stellar in CTE. You know the Sabin-Schellenberg Center well. They also have a middle college, so they're doing the dual enrollment, dual credit piece very well. Because of the housing crisis and other economic factors, however, they have received a lot more students in poverty who've been pushed out of the city, and their poverty rates are accelerating. And I know that were they to be a recipient of the grant money, they would be much more powerfully able to help those students in poverty achieve graduation if they could put all of their resources into dropout prevention. But under this measure, school districts such as North Clackamas and even Little Ashland cannot. They must do all three. And the accountability level of expectation for immediate return on investment in terms of student achievement are very aggressive in this grant program. And so it is, the author of the bill said in a work group a rulemaking meeting I attended that you could put $98 out of 100 behind one area and $1 each out of the other two areas and be compliant with the act. That would not actually get you to those accountability levels for outcomes at the end of the grant, at the end of a two-year period. So what we would like you to hear is that in rural school districts, students are probably not going to have the ability to maximize their use with a little bit of money, a great big amount of expectation, a lot of regulations and requirements, the possibility that if the district doesn't achieve those outcomes, that the district, that the Department of Ed is to intervene. There's an intervention piece in there in the language. All of these mechanics make this grant program something that I believe is not going to be as successful as BUILD. And that would be a shame, because these are very important areas that we really want to do the best policy we can with. And I believe that though House Bill 2246 makes a modest run at correcting some of these issues, we didn't get there. And I'm a little frustrated that we can't still get there, that we can't do good policy. We have time. We should be doing good policy, not good enough policy. And for with that reason, we offered the A3 amendments, which are in OLIS. They are before you today, which would fix these and some of the other flaws that we see with the policy in order to make the grant program the best it could be. We would hope that you would consider those amendments. We think that that would put everybody on the same page in terms of having a rightful expectation that we could achieve what we hope to achieve for our students in Oregon. Thank you.
Thanks, Lori. Questions of the witness? Thank you, ladies. We appreciate your input. Mr. Wilson? Oh, we wanted to hear from the department.
Yeah.
Can we have somebody from the department? If we had questions from Representative Parrish and probably others. So Representative Parrish, you want to state your question again?
Good morning. So I'm Cindy Hunt, the Government and Legal Affairs Manager at the department. I brought with me Emily Nazaroff, who served as our lead person on all things 98. What I want to say about the measure is that the department worked with the Chief Ed Office initially to introduce the measure, because when the measure passed, we recognized that there were some technical issues, you know, that needed to be addressed so that we could fully implement the measure. But we were also very happy with the work of the work group. We participated fully in that process, and today we stand before you in favor of the engrossed version of the bill, and we are open for any questions that you have.
Representative Parrish.
Okay, so the two specific things I want to make sure are allowed into this bill is the first piece of, if you've got a small school, or, you know, I mean, frankly, I've got school districts that probably aren't going to put in an automotive program, mm-hmm. just because that's not where their head's at, right? I mean, mm-hmm. so, however, there are children who want to take that type of programming. So does this bill, as it's written, allow the school district to take those Measure 98 funds and pay the local community college so that some kid can get STEM up at the community college?
Yeah, Representative Parrish, co-chairs, thank you for that question, because I think that's one of the common questions we've been getting because of the confusion around, I'm going to use Mr. Wilson's term, the three buckets, and he's grimacing that now that I'm quoting him. But because under the CTE's bucket, we've talked about how the program has to be part of a program of study. However, there's the two other buckets, so like dropout prevention. So if a school district is using the strategy as you described to address dropout prevention, with that kind of side of the equation, then we would say, yes, you could use those monies as long as they're expanding or it's a new program.
Can I follow up?
Go ahead.
I'll say, so on the program of study, I would argue that if you had a program like an auto shop, one quarter of that, is probably maybe two, is all a student would be able to normally take and still try to get 24 credit hours for their diploma. So they're not offered a huge opportunity to engage in sort of this cohort type model where they're connected to that curriculum, you know, from their freshman year all the way through, because the structure of the school day just simply doesn't allow that. So, I mean, so when you're talking, please define for me what program of study is under the model of this is what a diploma requires when kids don't have the opportunity to take more than a class in any one subject that they really care about, maybe band or something that, you know, and even then they're trying to, and I know my kids' high school, if you want to take band for more than, you know, 1 or 2 years, you're doing after school classes and summer classes and early morning classes and even community college classes to try to get all your rest of your credit requirements in so you can stick with that one piece that you really want to do. Our system's not designed to do long-term program of study.
Co-Chair Smith and Smith Warner, Co-Chair Monroe, and Representative Parrish, Emily Nazarov with the Oregon Department of Education. So we defined in our rule that the CTE program is a program of study. And when we talk about a program of study, we're not talking about specifically that one kid's experience and how many courses they take, but that the district has developed a program of study where a student could take advantage of all of those courses if they chose to. There's specific criteria for what a program of study could look like. Generally, there's a connection between the high school and the post-secondary institution. There's an opportunity to move towards some sort of certificate or industry credential. And so we've defined it that way. We've also allowed districts to spend the money on a CTE program of study startup. So if a district doesn't already have a program of study in existence, they could start that process with this Measure 98 money and so get that first class off the ground, or they could join up as part of a consortium and do a program of study as part of a consortium. But in answer to your specific question about that one kid's experience, that student doesn't have to move through all of the courses that are offered through the program of study. They can take one.
Follow up.
Go ahead.
Because I think it's important we get this bill right. This is something voters asked us to do, so I appreciate the latitude, Mr. Chair. Again, if you go back to that smaller school district or a school district that doesn't have facilities or whatever, you might only be able to offer up and stand up one class and not, like, here's Auto Shop 1 and Auto Shop 2 and painting and restoration, and, like, all these different pieces that go with it. Mm-hmm. So does this bill then allow a high school to outsource that to the community college and say, our program of study is really technically at Clackamas Community College, and you want to do that, we'll give you the money, student, all students, five students, one student, and we'll let you use their program of study and hitch their wagons to something that actually exists. And does that still qualify them for grant money under this bill?
Co-Chairs Monroe and Smith Warner, Representative Parrish, I can't answer the question about whether, based on the information you're giving and my knowledge of what a program of study looks like, I can't tell you right now whether what you're describing would qualify as a program of study. We would look at that and work with the district to try and figure out how they could make a program of study and look at could it qualify under the dual credit bucket of Measure 98, and provide technical assistance to that district and see if there's a consortium in the area that they could join to make that happen. But I can't answer the specific question. I can get more information for you.
Okay. And then the other piece of that whole original question was you have been administering the grant money for World of Speed. Seven school districts are using those dollars. Seven school districts, I'm assuming, and their 10 high schools would like to continue to be sending their children to an automotive program that is housed in a nonprofit facility, or even potentially at the Aurora Airport at some point, in a for-profit facility that is willing to give space for classrooms to teach this and sort of in a real world of work kind of way, along with that college credit piece for high school credits. Does this bill, or is that going to allow those types of programs to use that money if they're already in existence? Do they have to be real, like, brand new programs that are being stood up? Does it allow it at all?
Representative Parrish, co-chairs, so let me unwrap your question a little bit. So first of all, it would have to qualify in one of the three buckets. It sounds like it does, and I think it does. So let me just put that out there. But the second part of your question, I believe, is getting to the section in the bill that talks about that school districts have to either expand or do new programs. But, and people are kind of focusing on that. But there's another section to, or there's another paragraph, rather, in that section, which talks about if funding for a particular program has been discontinued, a school district can also then use the 98 funds. Now, I have not seen the final version of our budget yet, so I can't speak to whether or not the World of Speed is within our budget. But if it were not, that would be a program that was discontinued with the funding. So therefore, that, you know, that expansion, you know, wouldn't apply. It would be, you know, more like the discontinued part of the, you know, the provision would apply. So I believe the answer would be yes. But again, I also want to emphasize it's up to the local districts, too.
And does their profit status matter in sort of who's managing that? Because again, they're not a school district. They're just delivering the curriculum there. You could have, I've got a union shop in my district that is the local, you know, 290. If they wanted to stand up a program there, can those Measure 98 dollars get to those types of programs if it's that delivery is not happening on the campuses? Like, I really want to be clear that regardless of the entity, if classwork is happening in it, that Measure 98 lets us do that.
Right. So, Representative Parrish, co-chairs, there's nothing in 98 that prohibits a school district from contracting with an entity to, you know, provide educational services. There's no restriction on contracting, for example, with nonprofits, for-profits, colleges, universities, you know, kind of the gambit of things. So, again, it would be up to the local district.
I just wanted all that on the record. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Additional questions? Senator Roblin?
So, I mean, and for some people who don't know, CTE is kind of a federal program. We get federal money for some of that. So the program of study, you could have two or three programs of study that use some of the same courses. So if you had an English class, for example, that taught technical writing, and you're going to get an English credit for your graduation requirement, it's also a technical writing class, so it's part of that course. In each one of those, you're also going to have an advisory group of local people who are going to help you design that program. It's not an easy process, but it is a really good one, and the results have been really great. Those kids that stay in the program and have multiple credits tend to graduate. So I hope people take it seriously, and I know ODE has the expertise to help people understand the process. It's not simple, and a lot of small districts have done it because they've found it to be really successful for their programs. The other question I have is goes back to the one I asked earlier, and that is, do we have enough staff out there to teach these courses, especially in CTE? We have had an exception for retired people to come back and not affect the PERS stuff. I think it sunsets in a year. I don't think the programs we currently have will survive if we don't renew that, because I think we're going to have to do that. Any thoughts about getting people that could actually teach these courses?
So, co-chair Senator Roblin, you know, you ask an interesting question, and oh gosh, I'm going to have to give you a lawyer answer. It depends, and here's why: is because, you know, 98 gives school districts a lot of flexibility where they spend the money. I don't believe we know that districts will necessarily spend the money in CTE, for example. You know, there's the other buckets. And so, you know, that's why, you know, as it relates to 98 and whether or not 98 itself sort of creates a shortage of CTE teachers, at this point, it depends. You know, I know the TSBC, you know, director is sitting back here, too, and she probably has a better handle on, you know, the status of teachers in the state than certainly I would, and could provide information, you know, perhaps on, you know, CTE teachers specifically. But regarding to 98, we kind of have to wait and see how our district's going to implement this, what kind of choices they're going to make, and before we can fully answer your question, I think.
Okay, I appreciate that. Add that
this doesn't directly answer your question of the numbers, but Measure 98 does allow districts to spend CTE money on licensing and training for teachers to build up that number.
Okay. And my question would be, for small rural districts, the involvement of the ESD. We have ESDs all over the state. Do you anticipate that for very small districts that the ESDs would play a significant role?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Co-Chair Senator Monroe, yes, definitely. And in the rules that we adopted, we allowed, for example, school districts to come in together in consortiums with their ESDs to apply for funds, because we anticipated that, and especially in the areas that you described, that they would need that support, if you will.
Thank you. Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I just want to ask, so the 11 districts that were mentioned in testimony that are not eligible to apply, can you talk a little bit about that? Some of that, I would assume, because there are districts in the state that don't have high schools or high school students. But do you know specifically?
Coach Smith-Warner, without seeing the exact list of districts that we're talking about, I would guess that there are some schools that don't serve high school kids. There are some schools that contract with another district to provide high school services for the high schoolers in their district. I'm guessing those are the districts we're talking about.
Okay.
Thank you.
That makes sense. Additional, anything for these ladies? Thank you very much, Madam Co-Chair.
Well, I was going to say not for them specifically, but I do have another couple of comments I'd like to make while we're still in the public hearing section. So
certainly,
if they would like to sit down, they can do that first.
Certainly, we'll allow that, of course.
I just wanted to make a few comments, both as a legislator, as a voter, as someone who serves on the subcommittee and who is on the work group about this bill. I do respect the fact that this ballot measure indeed passed. It passed by a majority of the voters, and we talk a lot and do a lot of things in here about the will of the voters. And so, indeed, I believe the voters gave us some specific task to implement this measure. I also believe and know that the voters did not send any money with that. And this was, as so often happens through the ballot measure process, this was the same way that localities accuse us of doing unfunded mandates and we accuse the federal government of doing unfunded mandates. I believe that this, as in so many cases, is an unfunded mandate that we received from the voters. And so I believe that as we implement this, that is going to play an important role in this. And while I respect that it passed, it also did not come with any funding. And so everything we have had to do has been to work within existing pots of money. So truly what we do for this is by definition going to take away from anything else, because it is an additional requirement to the work that we already do. I also believe that, as we all do, that the goals of this increase in graduation rates, everyone here agrees with that. Everyone at ODE, all of the districts. I believe that we all want this to succeed. And I believe that the work that ODE did in their rulemaking, I believe that the work that we did in our work group, that is everyone's goal. And so I talk to my kids a lot about assuming good intentions, that we need to assume good intentions. And I've said this in work groups that I've done and in meetings that I've had. And that is what I continue to do here, and that I think we all continue to do. We have we had long discussions about how do we make this successful? How do we strike that balance between giving districts enough flexibility to do what makes the most sense for them and not overburden them in an impractical way for achieving these goals? So I would just like to say, I believe we need to run this out. Like, okay, we have a biennium coming up. We've established some rules. We are not fully funding it because it did not come with any money. And so let's take those 2 years. This committee will meet regularly then. We will continue to meet throughout the biennium. Let's track this closely and see how it goes. And as my colleague Representative Barnhart often says, we usually have to go back to things a few times to get them right. And I believe that we may have to do that here. And we need to let it play out and get started. And indeed, there was not consensus, if by consensus we mean full agreement in that group. And I will happily acknowledge that. And ultimately, as the legislators, I believed it was and it is our job to take as much of that information as possible and make the best decision that we can. So I thank everyone for their contributions here. And I would also argue this is another reason why we need to do more things through legislation rather than the ballot measure process, because in this process, we do indeed get to have some back and forth. And in a ballot measure, as we found with the marijuana ballot measure, where the language was written to have the money go to the common school fund, even though there is general acknowledgement, what they really meant was the state school fund. So that these are the kinds of things and the supplements of plant that I believe that all of us share. I hope that this makes a marked difference in the short term on our graduation rates and everything. And I eagerly look forward to tracking this throughout the next 2 years and helping to make it as successful as possible in the schools, in the district, and across the state.
And with that, is there anybody that didn't get a chance to sign up that wanted to testify on 2246? Not seeing anybody, we will close the public hearing on 2246, open work session.
And may we stand at ease before we open the work session, please?
Please. Okay.
Thank you.
We can stand at ease. In work session tomorrow at the beginning of the meeting. And we'll go then to work session on Senate Bill 13.
Mr. Chair, this is the Native American Curriculum Bill. You had a public hearing, I believe. I've lost count of days. I think it was last week, but I'm not sure. This is a bill that directs the Department of Education to develop a curriculum for grades 4 through high school relating to Native American experience and history in Oregon. I think the department is believing that they'll, in talking to them, they'll be developing curriculum in three grades, probably 4, 8, and at least one in high school. The funding for this is included in OD's budget at a level of $2,200,000. Of that will be used by the department for their roles in developing the curriculum and professional development, and the remaining 1.8 would be sent out as grants to the 9 tribal governments across the state. The bill establishes content requirements for curriculum, and the curriculum is supposed to be developed for implementation in the 1920 school year. And there are a series of reporting requirements included in the bill.
Thank you very much. Are there questions of Mr. Wilson? Madam Co-Chair, let's have a motion.
Senator Monroe, I move Senate Bill 13 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Heard the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there any objections to the motion? Okay, and we need carriers. Madam Co-Chair?
I would be happy to carry it to the full. Senator Roblin to the Senate.
Sanchez.
And, yes, Representative Sanchez to the House.
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay.
Now we go to...
Close the work session.
You're going to need to close the work session.
Yeah, close work session. Open work session on House Bill 2763.
Okay, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House
Welcome
Bill.
Back.
Yes, thank you. House Bill 2763 relating to school nursing services makes changes to the National Board Certification Fund and the types of costs which may be reimbursed from the fund.
No.
Am I on the
Senate Bill 111 is the nursing, and House Bill 2763 is the board certification.
National Board Certification.
For teachers.
Yes.
Yeah, I think you just have the wrong cut line, maybe, on your subject. It's not related.
Oh, yes. The wrong relating to clause, excuse me.
We're on
National Board Certification Fund.
Okay.
The Teacher Standards and Practices Commission is directed to waive the renewal fee for licenses of educators who are certified by a national professional organization for teaching standards. The LFO recommends adoption of the -A6 amendment, which strikes language related to the funding from the Network of Quality Teaching and Learning, and instead provides a general fund appropriation in the amount of $1.7 million in the 2017-19 biennium. And the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission may retain up to 10% of the monies received in the fund for administrative expenses incurred related to the teacher reimbursements.
Okay. Monica, are you okay with this bill? Okay. We're giving you more work.
That makes a difference, you know. We agree.
I bet it does. Madam Co-Chair, a motion on the A6.
Senator Monroe, I move adoption of the -A6 amendment to House Bill 2763.
Discussion of the motion. Any objections to the motion? It's adopted. Madam Co-Chair.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2763 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Discussion of the motion. Any objections? Yeah, Senator, Representative. Wisner.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Real brief, I want to thank the director of TSPC for her part on this bill, Chief Education Office, ODE, OEA, OSBA, CEO COSA, and some local BEN teachers who started this thing over a year ago. And, of course, my co-sponsor on this bill, Representative Smith Warner, that I'm glad we're here, a lot of work and effort, and I think it's going to help the state of Oregon and our students and reward and help the teachers be better. Thank you very much.
Good. Anything else? Madam Co-Chair, final motion.
I think it's already, I think we
already did the motion?
Yeah.
Yep, we're just doing discussion.
Any objections?
Any objections to the motion? Madam Co-Chair, you want to carry this one?
How about Representative Wisnett to the full and both of us to the House floor?
Okay.
Do we have a Senate co-sponsor?
Dembro and Canope.
Okay. You pick. All right, Dembro.
Senator Dembro.
I don't get to give him work very often.
I haven't checked with Canope lately, so I don't know.
Close the work session on House Bill 2763 and open a work session on Senate Bill 111.
Okay, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, now we're on Senate Bill 111 related to school nursing services. The bill directs the Oregon Department of Education to aid school districts or education service districts with Medicaid billing for school nursing services. The bill has a $529,935 general fund and a $108,776 federal funds impact to the Oregon Department of Education and Oregon Health Authority in the 2017-19 biennium for three positions, which is 2.67 FTE. LFO does recommend the adoption of the A8 amendment, which incorporates the same language and changes that were made in the A6 amendment, and it also provides the necessary general fund appropriations and federal funds expenditure limitation to the two agencies.
Questions on this measure? This is a big one, dealing with school nursing and something that some of us have worked on for many years. Representative Wisner.
Yes. I just thank you, Mr. Coach. I didn't know it was here, the overall discussion. Again, I want to thank the task force on this. Worked over a year bringing this bill to you. Senator Mona Anderson and myself were the legislators on it. And again, a lot of work, public health, a lot of work from ODE. The actual suggestion for that we're voting on today came from ODE, and the committee will remember the briefing we had on how many funds this could bring school districts to increase their nursing services and hopefully school nurses. A lot of thanks, a lot of work. Thank you.
You bet. Okay.
Senator Monroe. Senator Monroe, I move adoption of the dash A8 amendment to Senate Bill 111.
Questions? Any objections to the motion? And now,
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 111 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Further discussion? I just want to say more because this is so important.
It is good.
Any objections to the motion? Okay. Carrier to the full.
I would like to.
Wisnet? And then Monis Anderson to the Senate. And do you want to do the House floor also?
Okay, you got your carriers?
House floor also. Please, thank you.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm sure Lori would love to carry.
Yes, she will. I agree.
Okay.
What is it with her and nurses anyway?
Close the work session on Senate Bill 111 and open a work session on House Bill 2729.
Okay, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2729 relates to the open educational resources at post-secondary institution of education. The bill directs the Higher Education Coordinating Commission to convene faculty, staff, and librarians from public universities and community colleges for the purpose of coordinating Oregon's open educational resources program. LFO recommends adoption of the A4 amendment, which incorporates changes made by the A3 amendment and also provides a $1 million general fund appropriation in the 2017-19 biennium to HEC. I would note on this bill, we have a preliminary budget report online for the committee members, and on page 3 of that preliminary budget report, there is an outline of how $640,000 of the appropriation will be spent, which was provided by HEC. And then there's a remaining $360,000 of the appropriated funds, which are to be distributed at the discretion of the HEC. However, there is a note that if a determination is made to proceed with the development of the statewide OER repository, funding priority should be given to the development of the repository plan.
Any further discussion? We need a motion on the A4 amendment.
Mr. Chair, I move the A4 amendment to House Bill 2729.
Discussion.
Period.
Any objections to the motion? And?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2729 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Discussion?
Yes.
Representative Wisnik.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Committee members, this effort started when Tobias Reed last December told me that we need to keep this program alive, and we've been working with the HEC, OCCA, and the higher ed lobbyists and representatives to get to where we are, that this is now a continuing its own. It's going to be a program that will go on. Hopefully the number of free online textbooks will continue to increase and continue to help reduce the cost of higher education for students. So great bill, should pass. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any objections to the motion? And carriers, Madam Co-Chair.
Do you want to do it again? Representative Wisnik to the full committee and to the House and Senate?
Not sure who's on the bill. Do we had all the
Patriots. There's nobody on the bill from the Senate. I have no problem.
Senator Roblin to the Senate.
Roblin it is.
You can still put your name.
That's true.
Okay. So we're back here tomorrow at bright and early 8:30, where we will take up the work session on 2246, and also we'll be dealing with ODE's budget and I believe Senate Bill 182 and maybe something else, who knows. It's kind of, things are happening fast. Okay, anything further for the good of the order? Any questions? We are adjourned.
When's the main break?
We are adjourned.
When's the